The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball, and welcome into another edition of Clown Takes. So definitely a lot to get into on this episode. We've got a superstar player against the Boston media this week, so lots to dive into there. Should be a good one. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, once again coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. Joining me on the show from Broward County, Florida, is Nick Diamonds. Nick, how are you?
I'm all right, guys. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm glad that we got something as juicy as this to get into on Clown Takes, because obviously the team on the field is tough to talk about these days. So At least we got some backroom drama to get into. So. Should be good. Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
I am excellent. This is going to be a very explosive episode of Clown Takes, which I'm looking forward to. As always, Cushman MLB on Twitter, at Bastards_Boston for the podcast account, Terry Talk Sox on Facebook, Terry Talk Sox on TikTok, which I'm very busy on, and I'm probably going to mess with that for a while. And then our in-print content, as always, on our Bastards of Boston Substack. Check that out.
Sounds good. Absolutely. Well, as I mentioned, we've got a little bit of a media firestorm to get into. So this all stems from the September 3rd game, the aftermath of that game against the New York Mets, one that the Red Sox unfortunately lost, as they lost that entire series. They were swept. But this was after the Tuesday night game. And, you know, we start to get tweets from a lot of the beat reporters, you know, after games, or talking to players or talking to Alex Cora. And a couple of tweets came out that caught our eye. And just a quick disclaimer before I start reading these tweets off, before we get into this, these reporters that we're going to mention, they are on Clown Takes, but that doesn't mean that we have like a personal vendetta against them. It's just for context. These were the tweets we were reading. These are the guys that were directly involved. But again, it's nothing personal, but you know, they're on Clown Takes because it caught our eye, and we have a lot of strong opinions on what went down Tuesday night. So the first tweet came from Christopher Smith. This was a little bit after the game, and he tweeted out that Rafael Devers is still sitting at his locker. Game ended around 9:45 p.m. He got up from his locker around 10:04 p.m., walked out, then came back in a few minutes later and sat down in his locker again. He still remains there. So obviously Devers has been struggling a lot lately. He's had the shoulder problem that's been nagging him, has had a tough series against the Mets, so he's taken the loss pretty hard, as you can tell. So then an hour after that, Christopher Smith tweets, this is at 11:03 that night, says, Rafael Devers did not speak. The media waited for him until 11 p.m. He was informed about an hour ago by the PR staff that we wanted to talk to him. He could have just said no then. Instead, he made everyone wait and then refused to talk. So this tweet kind of took off. The initial one about Devers sitting in his locker, I think a lot of people like myself, you kind of quickly look at it and you go, okay, well, yeah, he's beating himself up. Tough loss. He's the best hitter on the team. He's struggling. Fine. But then you see this one, you're like, oh, he didn't speak. But then you read it further and it's, you know, it's Christopher Smith like taking it personally. Like, he made us wait for over an hour and, you know, and didn't speak to us and all this stuff. And Chris Cotillo also chimed in saying that apparently he's done this before and it's been an issue going back since April. And the beat writers have I guess, complained to the team about it. And the team has just said, well, you know, it's just the way he is sometimes, and we'll talk to him. But clearly the beat writers have an issue with Rafael Devers. And I guess it's not the first time it's happened that he has not wanted to speak to them. But again, it's, to me, it's just the attitude that was displayed by Christopher Smith and Chris Cotello, and even some other beat writers got in, you know, on the take here. Our old friend Gabrielle Starr, you know, chimed in basically saying that, oh, I guess he's not as much like Xander Bogaerts as he thought. And then she promptly deleted that tweet, as she's now getting famous for these days. So she dipped her toe in the water, then dipped right out afterwards. But yeah, obviously the beat writers are not happy with Rafael Devers. They are taking it personally, and they have no problem basically just openly whining on Twitter about it. Chris Cotello, it's now technically September 5th. He is still on Twitter tweeting about it. Like, to this, at this minute, at this hour, is still tweeting about the Rafael Devers situation. So clearly it went up their rear end, and they are not happy about it. You know, the team has basically said, yeah, Devers, you know, Cora basically said he knows he needs to be better in the future. And, you know, it's, he's a team leader. He takes it hard, blah, blah, blah. But clearly the beat writers have a huge issue with Rafael Devers, and they have no problem just going straight to Twitter to just air their grievances. So, Nick, I'll start with you. When you saw this all go down Tuesday night, and you've seen the aftermath over the next couple of days, what is your reaction? Are you more angry at Rafael Devers for the way he handled it, or are you more sort of on the beat writers for the way that they are handling it?
I'm more on the beat writers. I'm more angry towards the beat writers' side. My first take on it is, why do they care? They should know by now that Rafael Devers rarely speaks to the media. And if he does, it's with a translator. Like, it's never truly genuine, you know? Also, I think they're just looking for things to complain about because viewership is down, because people are finally not tuning in to watch this team anymore. The Patriots are starting back up. The NFL is back. College football started last week. There's other things that you can watch besides Red Sox baseball lose 5-6 times a week at this point, you know? So the beat writers are just doing their job. I guess Rafael Devers should probably step in there, talk to him for 10-15 minutes if he says he's going to. I mean, he makes $300 million. He can make 15 minutes of time, but also he's been hurt. The team is out of it. He wants to be left alone, and I don't blame him. You know, it's the beat writers just causing up drama, looking for stories, trying to get views, you know, trying to do their jobs, but they need to shut up about it. Rafael Devers rarely ever speaks to the media. What was going to change a day after he's been hurt and the team stunk?
Terry, how about you? Are you team beat writers or team Rafi?
Team Rafi. So let's put ourselves in Rafi's shoes. Okay. He gets called up 2017, just before the trade deadline. Mike Moustakas was a big name on the trade block that year, and I know some Red Sox fans wanted him. I wouldn't have minded, but the move ended up being to promote Rafi Devers, even though earlier in the month they said they had no intentions of doing it, but they promote him. They also got Eduardo Nunez, who is having a hell of a season in San Francisco, and then continued that here, was a spark plug for the Red Sox. Unfortunately, he got hurt right at the start of the playoffs that year. But Devers comes up, and then he makes the team the next year. And I know 2018 wasn't pretty for him, but, you know, it's not always easy for a rookie, as we've seen. Casas has had his struggles. Rafaela has. Duran certainly did. So, you know, Devers isn't unique in having a, you know, a not-so-great first season. But when he got called up, this is the team that was in place, okay? And let's just go with 2018, his first full season. Andrew Benintendi was a rising star and thought to have been a cornerstone of the Red Sox for the long-term future at that point, was very good in 2018. He was the left fielder. Jackie Bradley Jr., none of us were a big fan, but a well-respected defensive player, a nice presence in the clubhouse. He was the center fielder. And then Mookie Betts, probably... Duran's stealing his thunder as of late, but Mookie Betts is the most talented player I've ever seen, just in terms of raw talent on the Red Sox. Those are the guys in the outfield. He's got Xander Bogaerts right to his left at shortstop. A rising star. I don't know if he's Cooperstown bound at this point, but the sky was the limit for Xander. Then you had JD Martinez DHing, kind of taking over, you know, Big Poppy's presence in the lineup, hitting third or fourth. And then even in the pitching staff, Chris Sale was a god in 2017-2018. Just barely missed the Cy Young. David Price, now don't get me wrong, I hated his guts, but still one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball. Flamed out not long after. Nobody really saw that coming, but a big presence and an ace pitcher in that rotation. And then you had Rick Porcello, say what you want, won a Cy Young a couple years prior. 2018 was actually a very good year for him, his second best in Boston. But look at all those guys. That's what Devers is coming into. That's what he's starting his career around. And he was like a kid in a candy store. He was just happy to be there. And that 2018 team was a wagon. That's a team we're going to talk about for decades. They won 108 games, all-time franchise record, and then they win it all. They only lost one game in every round of those playoffs. That's how dominant they were. And Devers gets a ring. That's how he came up. And that's the type of Red Sox team we all know and love. You know, that was the quintessential big market Red Sox team that was put together to just to mow everyone down and win a championship. Okay. And then year after year, one by one, every single one of those guys left. And now it's only Rafi. And none of those guys was really adequately replaced. You have finally had, you know, a resurgence, you know, or I shouldn't say a resurgence, but an emergence in a guy like Duran. And a couple other guys are trying to break through, but it's just Rafi Devers. That's it. Those days are long gone. He's finished in last place in three of the last 4 years. Might happen this year. Who knows? We don't know how bad it's going to get. But Toronto and Tampa, they're not far behind us, and we have to play them. We've got six games against one of them. It might be Tampa. And then one more set against the Blue Jays, who took three out of five against us, if you count that rescheduled game. But if you're Rafi, I mean, what a depressing last few years. I mean, compared to how you came into the league. And it's not fair to put the pressure on Rafi Devers. It is not fair. It's not fair for Sam Kennedy and John Henry and the front office at the beginning of the season to tell Rafi, man, crush it this year. Get this team into the postseason. You're our highest paid player. We're really relying on you. That's an unfair set of expectations on Rafi Devers. And yeah, he did get a $311 million contract, the biggest in franchise history. But did he go to the buffet tables right away like Pablo did when Pablo got his $95 million? No. Did he just start dogging it and giving 60-70% effort as soon as he got paid? No, he showed up, and he, regardless of what the team's done, Devers has put together 40% of a Hall of Fame career so far. He's on track for it. And he's probably just going to cruise right into Cooperstown when all is said and done on the first ballot. He's probably going to hit 500 home runs at least. His metrics are going to be off the charts, okay? He's living up to his contract, and he's doing his end of the bargain. So, in my opinion, the beat writers need to turn their attention to ownership in the front office. And they do it at times, but they have the ultimate blame here. They have the ultimate blame, and everybody needs to lay off Rafi Devers. I don't care. You know, Chris Sale, you know, he was kind of a dud, and that's not entirely his fault, but he never lived up to his contract. We've seen so many players time and time again not live up to it. Carl Crawford, another infamous one. David Price, like I said, flamed out, didn't live up to his contract. Rafi Devers is living up to it, and I think he's exceeded it. So I don't... The beat writers need to turn their frustration to someone else. And if Rafi needs time, if he needs a couple nights off from the media, then he should be given that level of respect. Devers isn't a hey, look at me guy. He's never had a history of disrespect, you know? So I think the beat writers are out of line, and they need to back off. That was a hell of a rant.
Yeah, no, and like you made a lot of great points. I mean, the team that Rafi came up to, you know, that 2018 team, it's a great point. Like year by year, a new leader was peeled off that team, you know, and like I don't count Mookie Betts. He was never a vocal leader either, which I don't remember him ever getting criticized for that. But OK, I guess he's untouchable. But all the other, you know, strong leaders that were on that team, they all got peeled off over the next couple of years and never really replaced. This is a team that is now in a transition period where Devers signed the big contract. He's still only 27 years old, but because of that, he's now considered the team leader, even though that's never been his personality. And anyone who thinks that that was going to be his personality doesn't know the player. And what I'm getting tired of from the beat writers too, and like there's a lot that annoyed me with them, but the ones that said, well, it's surprising that he would do that, given that he looked so up so much to Xander Bogaerts. And Xander Bogaerts was always accountable and always talked to the media. Okay, they're two different people. Xander Bogaerts is a very outspoken, very, you know, charismatic guy. He, you know, he had no problem talking to the media. Devers isn't that guy. We've known this. We've seen him since he was 19 years old. Like, the guy is not comfortable talking in front of a microphone. Okay, so the fact that he looked up to Bogaerts doesn't mean that he has to be Xander Bogaerts. Like, that's a stupid standard to put on him. That's not who he is. And look, in their defense, should Rafael Devers in future sort of communicate somehow that, hey, you know what, guys? Like, I'm beat up. I'm exhausted. I'm pissed. Not tonight. I'll talk to you tomorrow before the game or something, but not tonight. Sure, okay. Maybe they need to talk to him about that in the future, but... Here's what annoys me with them. They kept saying all he had to do was say he's not speaking to us. Oh, really, guys? And then what would have happened? If Rafael Devers said, I'm not talking to the media tonight, Chris Smith, Chris Cotello, all these guys race to the laptop and they fire up the headline. Red Sox star Rafael Devers, who's earning $300 million, refuses to speak with media after loss. And they fire it out there. And that's what they do. You don't want to talk to us? Throw the player under the bus and just put that headline out on Twitter and then everyone reacts to it. All the Red Sox fans who look at it, they probably don't read the article. They just see the headline. They're like, wow, Devers refused to speak to the media? He stinks. Wow, what an a-hole Rafi Devers is. And all the beat writers are safe and everyone's on their side and they just throw the player under the bus. You know for a fact that's what they would have done. If Devers said to them, I'm not talking, they would have spun it as he refused to talk to us after a loss. The star player who's making $300 million doesn't have time for us. So the fact that he, you know, made them wait, no one forced you to stay there for an hour. Like, stay there for an hour for what? What quote is Rafael Devers going to give you that's going to be so earth-shattering that you have to wait an hour for it? He's just going to give you the same generic stuff he's given you all season. Yep, we got to play better. I've got to play better. No excuses, blah, blah, blah. Like, I can't remember Rafael Devers ever saying anything during his Red Sox tenure that, like, really spoke volumes. It's not his fault. Again, as I said, that's not who he is. He's not the David Ortiz who's going to make the big bombastic speech, you know, in the dugout or whatever. He's not Xander Bogaerts who's going to stand in front of the media and talk for, you know, 20, 30 minutes after each game. It's never been who he is. So the fact that they waited that long just so they could bitch about it later, sorry, that's on you guys. Like, it's September. The team is tanking. He's hurt. He's playing through his injury as much as he probably doesn't want to, but he is, because that's actually the kind of leader Rafael Devers is. He leads on the field, not because he has to talk to you clowns every day, because he goes out there and he plays his ass off. And he's frustrated because he's, you know, not performing well. His shoulders are probably killing him. We'll probably find out in the offseason, like, he had to have some sort of procedure on his shoulder that, you know, would have required an IL stint, but he doesn't want to do it because he wants to go out there and try to win. And, you know, again, like, think, read the room, guys. The team is falling apart. Their season is pretty much over after, you know, fighting their asses off all year. And you're going to sit there and tweet and complain because Rafael Devers didn't talk to you. And, oh, we waited around for an hour. Like, it just comes off as so petty and very entitled. And it's just these beat guys, like, in general, I like a lot of what they do. Again, like, you know, Cotillo breaks a lot of stuff for the team. Like, he's a worthy follow. These guys are all worth following. I'm not telling you, like, not to read their stuff. But I don't know. When you want to, like, throw the star player under the bus just because he didn't want to talk to you, and then, like, days later, you're still tweeting about it. Well, it's been an issue since April, and, you know, they're going to have to talk with him in the offseason. Like, wagging your finger at the guy? You're not, like, no. You're not above the team. You're not above Rafael Devers. He's a superstar. He's, you know, he's giving his all out there. And you guys are just, as Nick said when he let off, like, they're just looking for something to bitch about because the team stinks. Their season's over. You know, as you mentioned, like, football's back, so no one's really paying attention. Everyone's watching the Patriots now. No one's reading your articles. No one's, you know, not as many people are watching Nesson now. Like, that's really, it's really just a combination of they're as frustrated as the fans are, and they just took it out on Rafi Devers instead of directing their anger where they should, which is at the front office, maybe at the manager if they want to. I don't know. But it was just such a weird and, like, aggressive attack against a guy in Rafael Devers who, since he's been here, has, like, done nothing wrong. I mean, as Terry said, he signed the big contract and he's had one of the best years of his career. Like, before the shoulders really started bothering him, was kind of entering his name in, like, the MVP race. Now, he wouldn't win it because Gunnar Henderson's probably going to run away with it, or Aaron Judge, actually. But still, he would have gotten a lot of MVP votes before this recent slump. And, you know, who knows? There's still a chance for him to have a really good end to the season. But the bottom line is he signed the big deal and he's lived up to it already. And this is the guy you're going to pick a fight with at the end of the year? It just, it came off as really random and just super petty and entitled. And that's why I'm Team Rafi. And again, like, I'll still follow the beat guys. I'll still read their stuff. But, like, definitely lost a lot of respect for them over this incident. It was just weird.
I wouldn't be surprised if they just shut down Devers for the season, and I wouldn't be upset with it either. At this point, he's clearly in pain, and they're not going to – he's, what is he going to do the rest of the season? It would be nice for him to get 30 home runs just for, like, his, you know, Hall of Fame stats maybe. You know, maybe he'd have 10 seasons with 30 homers or something. Who cares? I don't care. Shut him down if that's best for his long-term health. But I am just sick of these beat writers and their clickbaity titles, just looking for clicks from casual fans. Any fan who's watched 130 games, 140 games so far in the season knows exactly what's going on with Rafael Devers and knows exactly what he's going to say after the game. And no one really cares at this point. They all just watch them get – swept by the Mets, get destroyed by the Tigers, get destroyed by the Diamondbacks. Like, this team stinks right now, and everybody knows it. I mean, most fans know it, hopefully, at this point. But who cares what Rafael Devers has to say? And at this point, Chris Cotillo, go home. Go back to your hotel. What are you doing in the clubhouse until midnight waiting for Rafael Devers to say, my shoulders hurt? Like, at this point, just go home. Like, what are you doing? You're just going to put out a clickbaity title for casual fans to complain about. And I guess that's doing his job, but why? At this point, just it doesn't matter.
I think actually Cotillo is on vacation, so it's actually McAdam and Christopher Smith. Maybe Cotillo was weighing in on Twitter, though, which could have been the case. But a couple of things I want to point out, too. I've mentioned how everybody's left. You know, all those players are long gone. How many times in 2022 and 2023 was Bobby Dalbec hitting right behind Rafi Devers? Fourth. For what? And I know that's a Cora thing, but Devers still has to go to the plate knowing that Bobby's hitting behind him. And because of this, they're not going to pitch to me because they're not afraid of Bobby. You know, Rob Refsnyder has hit either in front or behind him. Adam Duvall in front or behind him. And Duvall was a streaky player, much like Tyler O'Neill. Franchi Cordero, another guy who would hit on either side of him at various points. That's what he has. He doesn't have these perennial all-star guys around him anymore. And if I'm Devers right now, I'm a tortured soul. I am a tortured soul. And he said last winter, I mean, he was very, well, I shouldn't say extremely outspoken, but he was on record saying, man, I hope they give us some help. I hope we get some better pitching or whatever. And of course he didn't. And the fact that he is this beat up and he's still playing, I think that's enough. That's enough for me. Like, he's what exemplifies max effort beyond that? What exemplifies a willingness to post up, go out there, and at least try to get it done more than that? I don't. If you're going to be mad that they brought Rich Hill in. Like, I would be upset about that. I know he's a nice guy and they seem to think he gives a good interview. I think he's boring as hell. I've listened to him on podcasts and I'm a Rich Hill guy, but not in terms of being a player on an MLB roster at this point. So the beat writers they need to do a better job picking their battles. And the bigger problem is upstairs. It's not in the clubhouse. It's upstairs. It's the dumbasses making the dumb decisions or not making decisions and putting us in a bad spot. This right now, I know we're slumping, but this is an offense that could have won the World Series, I think. If we had a couple more pitchers in there to go, if you could have, I guess you'd only have room for one if you factor in Pivetta, but if there were two number two or better pitchers in that rotation, I think you're contending for a championship. And I think this offense would have been extremely dynamic. I think Devers would have went off because that's his personality. He's a big game guy. Ask the Yankees. I think Jarren Duran is going to translate into that if given the opportunity to play in the postseason. I think Rafaela could do it. Rafaela this season has had a lot of key hits in the late innings. Even if it was just a single to keep the line moving, he would come through for the team. I think Tristan Casas, when healthy, would be a god in the month of October. And if you actually had a formidable rotation, if you weren't trotting out an unhealthy Pivetta or Cooper Criswell every fifth day, and you had actual pitchers in there that could go five, six, seven innings, I don't think this bullpen would be as mortal as it is right now. Your bullpen would be better. So it's the fact that you don't have skilled executives in that front office to make critical baseball decisions. That's what's killing this team. That's what the beat writers need to be focused on. And that's where the accountability needs to come from.
Yeah, I agree. And I understand in their position, it can be hard sometimes to constantly attack the front office because that, you know, you can get blacklisted that way and it's harder to get access if they, you know, if they really get annoyed with you, if you write too many bad things about them. So I understand that, but I don't know. I mean, geez, if you're too afraid to do that, like why is Devers the guy you go after? It just, you know, because he doesn't want to speak to you guys after a bad loss. Boo hoo. Like I wouldn't want to either. It's, you know, especially if my shoulder's killing me and, you know, my manager has basically seems like he's tapped out. You know, my teammates aren't picking me up or anything like that. Like it's so I'd be annoyed too. And this whole notion of, you know, the team needs to have a vocal leader. Does it really? I mean, shouldn't that be Alex Cora's job? Can't he just be the vocal leader who's, you know, because he's going to speak after every game. He actually has to, unlike the players. You know, the manager does have to speak. Maybe it's just Cora so checked out that it doesn't matter what he says at this point and the team's not listening. But I don't think you need, like, an overly vocal guy. Like, do we need Tristan Casas to become the vocal leader of this team? I'm not sure I can handle that. Like, he's a good player when he's healthy. He could be an elite player when he's healthy, but a full 162 of Tristan Casas talking to the media after every game, I don't know if I can handle that personally. That's a guy, I think, who talks too much. So I would much rather have a guy like Devers who does it on the field. That's how he leads. And that resonates in the locker room. So this whole idea that, well, you know, he doesn't speak enough or whatever, I just think it's bullcrap. And I think it's just kind of a lame excuse by the beat guys to, you know, give them an excuse not to go after the front office because that's too risky. When, as you mentioned, Terry, like everything that's happened this season, all the shortcomings, they all come down to the decision makers. It comes down to the roster. The players have done their part, you know, and the frustrating thing about the Red Sox this year is that the team could never function like a well-oiled machine at any point. You know, first half of the year, it was the starting pitching was unbelievable. Tanner Houck and Cutter Crawford looked like Cy Young candidates. And, they were carrying the team and the offense wasn't quite there because Story and Casas got hurt and, you know, they were kind of slow to get up. Then it flipped. The starting pitching started to go backwards, but the offense went on a tear in the middle of the summer where 1 through 9, everybody was hitting. And you were even getting contributions from guys like Dom Smith, who you picked up off the street, you know, like, and the bullpen was holding it down. Then, you know, the offense cooled off and the bullpen was throwing games away late. And so it was never consistent. And that goes down to the roster construction. It's just, they were hoping for too many guys to overperform at certain times. And it didn't happen all the time. Some guys did, but then other guys regressed. So it just, again, like that's where the frustration needs to be directed. Not at Rafael Devers, who's, you know, dragging his shoulders out there and like trying to carry the team on them when he just can't. He can't do it all by himself. Some guys have disappeared here in the second half, both on offense and in the pitching staff. So, you know, why not hold those guys accountable? Why aren't we talking to those players? Why aren't we writing about those players? You know, instead we're going to go after Rafi because he was, you know, too upset to talk to you after a game. So it's just kind of a lame excuse for not addressing what the real problems are.
I think it comes down to one word, and we mentioned it earlier. This night was embarrassing. We brought up how bringing Rich Hill to a game and watching him walk in runs is embarrassing. Having to deal with beat writers talk crap about Rafi Devers and just putting stuff out there that they don't need to at all, just accept the fact that he's not going to talk to you and get over it. I think that's embarrassing. I think it's also embarrassing. I think Terry will realize or agree with this is, I know he doesn't watch Nesson, is how over or outmatched Nesson was compared to the Mets broadcast this week. How I enjoyed the Mets broadcast so much this week compared to the Nesson broadcast. I know you brought up like Will Middlebrooks, and I just cringe hearing him talk. I can't stand it. So I'm going to miss not being able to watch the Mets broadcast going forward. So that was a positive about these last three games. But besides that, it's just been embarrassing the last few weeks. And it's from the top of the organization, from Breslow and ownership all the way down to the beat writers having a beef with Rafi Devers. So I think the entire organization is just embarrassing.
That Mets broadcast is really good. Ron Darling was a name that was floated to potentially replace Jerry Remy, and it didn't really go anywhere. And I'm not sure he really would have wanted to leave, you know, because he was a Mets guy for quite a bit of his career, if I remember right. And then Keith Hernandez has been there forever. But one broadcast crew I like a lot is the Orioles crew. Kevin Brown is great. He reminds me a little bit of Joe Buck. He's got a similar tone and a similar cadence, and he's fairly young. I mean, I think he's early to mid 30s, so you know, he's probably not even close to a finished product. But and he got suspended last year for being just very slightly critical about that Orioles team, and that was with the previous owner still in there. So I was thinking, man, could the Red Sox swoop in? But another crew I liked a lot was the Diamondbacks crew. They were kind of, I think it was on one of Eugenio Suarez's home runs, they were trying to mimic the Boston accent, neither one of them from Boston. And it went either into the monster or over the monster. And one of the announcers said, yeah, he hit that ball wicked far. It was just like the most random thing ever. But I've enjoyed listening to other crews. I'm done listening to Nesson for as long as O'Brien's in there. I just can't do it. I don't know who I like. I don't think any of them are 30% as good as Jerry Remy. I mean, they're all trying. I mean, Middlebrooks, he's given it his best effort. But I don't enjoy him. Euclid is just so vanilla to me. He just doesn't do it. I'm not invigorated by him. And Kevin Millar is just too hokey, really. He's like your drunk uncle in the booth. I'm trying to think. Merlone really is the guy, I think. And I know he's chirped us, and I think he's been full homer the last year or two, but I still like Merlone the best. If he was in it every day, I probably could go back, actually. But the two worst ones, and it sucks because they're going to be 9 of the remaining 22 games, is Tampa, awful crew. I just can't get into them at all. And I think Toronto might be the worst of them all. Buck Martinez, I just don't enjoy the guy. Nothing against him personally. I'm not captivated. I don't like his demeanor. It's not an entertaining broadcast.
So the one curse about living in Boston is I don't have a choice. I'm blocked out from everything else. So it's nothing but OB and whatever rotating cast member they want to put with them that night. I agree with you. They should just do him and Lou full time. Like, get rid of Euclid, get rid of Middlebrooks, don't bring Millar in, just have it be him and Lou. Like, when it's Lou with him, Lou tends to bring him back down to earth a little bit, which helps, but then he disappears for another 3 weeks. So it's just, yeah. Nesson hasn't been a good product, at least on the baseball side. Their hockey coverage is very good, but Nesson on the baseball side has been trash for a long time.
I did hear Papelbon on, I think I was doing Uber, and sometimes for some reason it's probably just because I can't figure it out on the app, but so I did have to listen to the Sox broadcast, and Papelbon was in there, and he was kind of rough. Like, you can tell he's not a professional announcer, but I feel like if he, you know, got more reps. I think he could be similar to Eckersley in a way, off the cuff and entertaining. So that's something. The other thing I worry about him is he's like a fan like we are. And if they're not making moves, you can tell he gets frustrated. So I could see him saying the wrong thing and just getting axed because of it. You know, I hope not, because he's one of my favorite people. But I don't know how you save that Nesson crew. I really like Mike Monaco. A lot of people like Fleming. I don't like Fleming, but he's popular, so he could end up getting the gig. But I don't like O'Brien. He just makes too many excuses for the Red Sox. It's just, he's not entertaining. He doesn't get your blood pumping. I don't like him.
Yeah, I mean, he tries to have like the exciting calls every now and then, but it feels very forced whenever it happens. It does, you don't
get it. It's not organic.
No, it's definitely not organic. Like when Orsillo, you know, got excited, like he would lose his mind, and like you could tell it was like real organic excitement. With O'Brien, it feels like a scripted, you know, here's my home run call. Like, it's just, yeah, it's too forced and hasn't been a good broadcast for a while, but I think we're stuck with it, unfortunately.
Dave O'Brien's fine on national TV, but if you have to listen to him every day, it is torture.
Yeah, and you know, he signed a multi-year deal 2 or 3 winters ago. So I'm hoping, like, I don't know where to find the Nesson data. Actually, Steve may be able to do that. But so I don't know what the ratings really look like. And I can't imagine they're great. And I don't think I'd be shocked to see them move on.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, the ratings have been dropping every year for the last couple of years. So, and it's a combination of the team not performing well, but it is the broadcast too. I mean, it's a lot of people don't like that broadcast. So, I think there are people who tolerate it, but no one. I've never heard anyone say that they love the Dave O'Brien era of Nesson. Like, I haven't heard one person say, "Yeah, no, he's actually great." It's either he's okay, or can't stand him. So I bet their ratings just continue to go down. But the problem is they'll probably just blame it on the team. You know, they won't blame it on O'Brien. I mean, he was their guy. So I think he's probably stuck in there for a while.
They don't like to admit they were wrong. And who was it? Or someone took a dig and was talking about Orsillo.
There was like a Sports Illustrated article that was basically like Red Sox, one of the worst moves the Red Sox ever made still comes back to bite him. And it showed like clips of Orsillo broadcasting in San Diego, and he retweeted it.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that is what it was. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, obviously still one of the worst mistakes they made, but whatever, we're stuck with it. So with that, we will wrap up this episode of Clown Takes. So hope you all enjoyed it. Keep an eye out for the White Sox series recap. That will come your way Monday morning. Hopefully it goes better than we think it will, but at this point, who the hell knows? So everyone, enjoy the White Sox series. Enjoy your weekend, and we will talk to you later. Take care.